Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's springtime in the Arab world, some bloody and brutal, some buoyant and hopeful. And now Palestinians are on the move. Last week in post-Mubarak Cairo, a unity agreement between old and often bitter Palestinian rivals, Fatah and Hamas. Israel's leader calls it a blow to peace. This hour on Point, a conversation with Palestinian thinker Sari Nusseibeh on Arab Spring and the Palestinians. You can join the conversation. Do you see new opportunity, new danger for the Palestinians, for Israel in the Arab Spring? What do you say to Fatah, Hamas, unity? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll go to Sari Nusseibeh, president of the Palestinian Al-Quds University in Jerusalem. But first, for perspective on Israel and the new Fatah-Hamas agreement, we go to David Horowitz, editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. David, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
We know you've been very critical of this unity agreement. Tell us first, if you would, why you think this has happened now. We recall the 06 elections where Hamas won. Then later, when Hamas and Fatah fought bitterly, Fatah kicked out of Gaza. What do you think has brought them to this ceremony in Cairo last week, David?
Well, I think Hamas may have felt that it was losing its source of stability in Syria. You know, it's been the leadership of Hamas, much of the leadership has been based in Syria. Syria is sort of collapsing, and the regime there is killing its own people. And I think Hamas was worried. The real question we have to ask is, why has Mahmoud Abbas agreed to this? Because this is a sort of welcoming, he sort of committed some kind of welcomed capitulation, really, to the forces that that have tried to kill him in the past, who he's described as the forces of darkness in the past, who, as you rightly say, you know, killed hundreds of their own people, of the Palestinians, when violently taking control of Gaza in 2007. So it's a terrible capitulation, as far as I can see it, by a tired, exhausted Palestinian leader who didn't lead his own people towards reconciliation with Israel and has now capitulated to those who are committed to destroying Israel.
How do you explain that from the Abbas side? There have been those who say, well, he tried and tried and tried. Israel was immovable. This is the only way he can do it. The Palestinians apparently looking to push this fall in the United Nations for recognition of a Palestinian state with or without Israeli sign-off. Abbas, I guess, wanting to see that before he retires. But why this as a path of, you know, what does it get, Abbas?
It's the path of least resistance for him. So I don't feel that he tried and tried, and I say that with great sorrow. I think personally he may have been somebody who was relatively well-intentioned, but he inherited a narrative that Yasser Arafat had disseminated, which is that Israel has no right to exist, a narrative that ridiculed the notion of a Jewish historic connection to the only place on earth where the Jews have ever been sovereign. He never energetically conveyed that narrative, the honest narrative, to his own people. He never explained to his people energetically why they would need to compromise, that the Jews had rights here. And therefore, he had a society that resisted compromise. Again, I don't think he tried terribly hard. The last Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, essentially offered him everything that the Palestinians purport to demand. This Prime Minister, more hardline, nonetheless froze settlement building for 10 months. Abbas didn't come to the talks. I think he just wants to be finished with this. I think he wants to retire. He will be able to claim that he has a kind of superficial level of unity here, which is, of course, absurd. Hamas will breach this deal whenever it's convenient for Hamas to do so. It's done it in the past. But this way he goes home. He says, look, I've got unity here. Let the rest of the world try to sort this out.
We saw 10,000, reportedly 10,000 or so Palestinians in the streets of Gaza last month asking for Palestinian unity. It was a small echo of what we've seen around the Arab world during the so-called Arab Spring. How do you think the Arab Spring will filter into the Palestinian community, Palestinian and Israeli politics?
Well, look, what I would hope for the Palestinians is exactly what I would hope would happen in the Arab world, which is that a genuine push for people, popular stake in their own government, for freedoms, for democracy, is realized, but not that it be subverted by extremists or be presented as having been attained simply by holding elections. I mean, we had an experience in this year in 2006, again, which you mentioned. there were Palestinian elections prematurely. There were no real opposition groups. There was a choice between sort of Arafat's legacy people in Fatah and the terrorists of Hamas. And really, the vote in those elections was a balance of power, of fear. People voted for the violent people they thought might protect them better against the other violent people. You need a process to democratize. You need a chance for parties to create platforms, for a media to report those platforms freely, for people to feel that they can vote without repercussions, without being persecuted as a consequence. I hope that happens throughout the Arab world. I would love to see that happening with the Palestinians. What I fear is going to happen, Abbas has now sort of set in motion this process which might lead to elections. But again, it will be a choice just between these two, Fatah and Hamas, no real cementing of democracy, no genuine representation of the people, and rather less than democracy at the end of it, I fear.
In your competing newspaper, Haaretz, on Friday, there was a big advertisement signed by 102, what was described as eminent Israelis, looking at Israel's posture in this time of the Arab Spring, saying, quoting here, "The world is changing around us, but the government of Israel is stagnant and paralyzed," criticizing what they called a rejectionist policy by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, calling it very dangerous. What about Israel's posture as this change sweeps through the Arab world, David Horowitz?
Look, I think there is a minority in Israel who believe that in this time of radical change, Israel needs to take dramatic risks, desperately seek to attain an accord at whatever, almost whatever price, including going back to the pre-67 lines from which Israel, of course, was attacked from 1948 to 1967. I think most people in Israel believe that we now have an additional complication. The middle ground in Israel wasn't certain that it had a partner, was agonizing about the price to pay for peace. Now it has to add to that the question of whether the people that it may or may not find to be genuine partners are even going to be there 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years from now. I mean, recently in Israel, there's been a lot of dilemmas about should we try and reach a deal with the Syrians? Should we relinquish the Golan Heights for peace with Syria? And now we have to say, well, even if we did do a deal with Assad, will he be here next month? And that's the same kind of thinking, I think, that the middle ground in Israel feels about the Palestinians. In other words, there's a minority that says, go for it, Israel, do the deal, even if that means that we're going to find Hamas in the West Bank ready to fire missiles at the airport next week. And there's a majority in Israel that says, we really need to be very careful here. Maybe the government should be more articulate in setting out its security needs, but this is really the last time in the world for Israel to be taking unwarranted risks in an incredibly unstable region.
And if there's no deal, is the status quo tenable for Israel as the region changes around it, David Horowitz?
The status quo is not good for Israel, Tom, and I want to make this point as well. Israel needs an accommodation with the Palestinians. We don't want to rule the Palestinians. We want to keep a Jewish and democratic Israel, which means separating from the Palestinians. And that's why we've been very reluctant to conclude that Abbas was not a partner, even though he didn't jump on the Ehud Olmert offer, which essentially, like I say, would have given the Palestinians what they wanted. We need an accommodation with the Palestinians, but it has to be with a stable, credible Palestinian leadership that tells its own people that the Jews have a right to a sovereign state in the Jewish homeland.
David Horowitz, editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining us now from Jerusalem is Sari Nusseibeh, president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem, also teaches philosophy there. He's author of What is a Palestinian State Worth?, his latest book. A leading Palestinian thinker, he comes from one of Jerusalem's most prominent families. He's been a longtime voice of moderation. Sari Nusseibeh, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
First, to the Fatah-Hamas Unity Agreement in Cairo last week. Many people are pointing to this as the first evidence of a kind of new geopolitical structure in your immediate neighborhood. What do you think of this unity agreement between rivals who, as you very well know, have fought so bitterly rather recently?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on the two leaderships, on the Fatah leadership as well as on the Hamas leadership, by the people themselves, both in Gaza and in the West Bank, to make a reconciliation between the two leaderships. The situation was very abnormal in the sense that this is the same people. There are two parties existing within the two communities, people belonging to the two camps, but at the same time coming from the same families or the same villages and towns. And so it wasn't really a very healthy situation. And over the past few years, there's been a growing pressure from the people on both the leaderships, the Fatah, as well as the Hamas leadership, to make this reconciliation. And I think that the revolution in the Arab world has in fact, enhanced, supported the call for the two leaderships to reconcile. And this is primarily why the two leaderships, in my opinion, finally reached a deal, although there are other reasons as well.
Do you think they can really live together after all the bad blood, after the fighting of so many years? They may have great goals in common. I don't know about that. But can they really work together, given all the struggle that has been there?
Well, the struggle was between political factions. It wasn't between the actual people belonging to those factions. And I think eventually, when you compare, you balance between whether you want to make peace in your own community and whether, on the other hand, you want to continue fighting, the balance usually is in favor of making peace within your own community. And this is the kind of pressure that was there and that was working upwards to make the two leaderships sign this agreement. In the Arab world, there were these uprisings, these revolutions against the leaderships in those countries for more freedom and so on. But in the Palestinian community, the pressure that was building up in the among the people was to make the two leaderships reconcile. Now, I hope that the two leaderships will reconcile. Of course, there are different ideological perspectives. There are going to be differences. There will continue to be differences. But in terms of reconciliation, I think at the level of the people, peace, I think, can be made and will be made.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Palestinians in the Arab Spring, Fatah and Hamas making peace with each other, where that leaves Israel and Mideast peace. My guest today is Sareh Nusseibeh. He's president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem, from a very prominent family there. He was the PLO's chief representative in Jerusalem, and perhaps he's been called the most moderate advisor in the councils of Yasser Arafat back in the days. Now he's out with a new book. It's called What is a Palestinian State Worth? And he's asking exactly how Palestinians should be looking at the issues of statehood in this time of the Arab Spring. Sareh Nusseibeh, I want to dive into the perspective of your new book, looking at what is a Palestinian state worth. But first, step back for a moment and look at this Arab Spring with us and what you think it means for the Palestinians, for Israel, for the patch of contested earth that you live on. What does it mean over time, the great political wave that we see unfurling across your region?
Well, I feel very optimistic in the sense that I believe that the revolutions that have taken place in the Arab world, the awakening, as it is called, of the Arab people, their rebellion against their dictatorship leaders, I think is a very positive change in the history of the Arab people. And hopefully, although I don't expect this to happen immediately, but the time sooner or later will come when governments in the Arab world will be truly democratic, there will be a true rule of the law, transparent and so on, with the preservation and security of human rights. Now, I think all of this will support a proper peace agreement, a proper peace process, and a peace agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and indeed between the Israelis and the rest of the Arab world. Because until now, the peace agreements that were being signed were really being signed between Israel on the one hand and very weak governments on the other side that were not representative of the people. And the governments in the Arab world always made the excuse of suppressing the people and of depriving people of their democratic rights by the excuse that they had to be fighting for the sake of the Palestinian people's rights. And I believe that today things are more clear, that the Arab world has its own problems, the Arab people have their own problems to fight for, they have their own rights to achieve, and that at one point or another, soon I hope, the Arab government, the Arab people will step forward and support the Palestinians in a just search for a peace agreement with Israel. So on the whole, I'd say this is a good turn of events, except, of course, that now what we're witnessing is this horrible reaction by some of the Arab leaders using their armies to bombard their own people. And I think this is a far worse kind of occupation when leadership of a country uses its own army to suppress an uprising of its people in search for freedom. So anyway, as a Palestinian, I have, you know, I fully support the Palestinian, the Arab revolutions, and I very much hope that sooner or later, though I don't expect it to happen immediately, we will have two partners in the Arab world for our just search for a peace agreement with Israel.
How do Fatah and Hamas work together, given that they have not agreed in the past and may not agree now, fundamentally, ideologically, on how to interact with Israel? Is there enough common ground? Does Hamas have to fold its embrace of armed resistance? Does Fatah have to step toward that embrace to work with Hamas? How do these two work together?
No, I mean, my own feeling is that Hamas will continue to be Hamas. They will continue to hold on to the views that they hold on to, but that eventually, hopefully in the climate of a peace process, and in case we do, in fact, manage to come closer to achieving peace, Hamas will just become a smaller blot on the Palestinian political map. Just as in Israel, you have opposition parties that do not believe in real peace or compromises with the Palestinians. Surely, it is possible also to have people on the Palestinian side that share the same kind of sentiment, but in the opposite direction. I think the test is not whether Hamas, what Hamas can do or not do. The test is whether Hamas has sufficient support among the Palestinians. And I believe personally that if we have a real peace process, that the supporters of Hamas will decrease in numbers.
You propose something in your new book, which is interesting coming from you. You were one of the earliest proponents of a two-state solution, but you ask your readers this time to engage in a thought experiment, to envision just one state with Palestinians and Israel's in one state, kind of Israel, Palestinians living there, in the whole of this territory. What are you getting at with this thought experiment?
Well, there are a number of things, but one thing I'm trying to get at is the following, that while we're waiting to bring about a two-state solution, for instance, and we're talking about we're negotiating, people are coming and going, making statements, declarations. But one thing at least that can be done in the meantime is to provide Palestinians with basic human rights, which they have been deprived of. The thing is that, you know, on the basis of our expectation or of our waiting to achieve a two-state solution, Palestinians have basically been living under occupation for the last 43 years, or a bit longer, without any of those rights. So my idea is, at least while we're waiting, and it may be a long wait again, another 5 years, 4 years, who knows, we can begin, and the international community can intervene to at least initiate a process by which Palestinians will begin to be given their basic human rights. And by this, I mean basic rights like, for instance, freedom of movement. If you think about it, the people in Gaza have been confined to their area in Gaza, unable to move into or out of that area. They cannot move freely in the rest of the country. Israelis on the other side, the other hand, can move freely wherever they like, especially in the West Bank. Settlers move freely in the West Bank. They make use free use of our resources in the West Bank, water, territory, and so on. So my idea is, while everybody is waiting and working for a two-state solution, the least that can be done in the meantime is to provide Palestinians with basic human rights, rights of freedom of movement, access to hospital services, education services, legal services, and so on, properties, working permits, and so on. So that's one thing. Now, another thing I was getting at is that if in the end a two-state solution isn't going to work, maybe we should start thinking about some form of federation in the future, some kind of federation between Palestinian and the Israeli state.
A federation instead of two states. Is that a serious suggestion, or is that a sign of failure? You were a two-state solution proponent.
Well, I'm a proponent, actually, of peace between Israelis and Palestinians. I'm a proponent, ultimately, of Palestinians and Israelis sharing the land one way or another, basically as equal human beings and as equal partners in the same area. This is my the values that basically guide me. Now, of course, we can share the land by means of dividing it up into two states. And, you know, I'm very willing and I'm still willing to accept the two-state solution if it is to come about. But failing that, if that doesn't come about, I'm suggesting that instead of waiting another 40 years and living in a kind of dream world, waiting for something that's totally a fantasy, we should also start thinking, at least in the meantime, of providing Palestinians with basic human rights as a step, not as a final end. But whichever it is, one state, two states, a federation of states, the basic values that must be preserved, that must be protected, that must be achieved and derived at, I believe, are the values of equality between the two peoples, that individual human beings should have access to equal human rights, equal political rights, whether in the same or in different political systems. But the system as it has worked so far hasn't actually provided this for Palestinians.
You know, in your new book, What is a Palestinian State Worth?, you ask some very deep questions about how much suffering, how much violence a state is worth. The New Republic describes your book as coming closer to advocating a Gandhian strategy than any other Palestinian leader's work to date. Are you proposing a kind of Gandhian Palestinian response, and do you have a real hope of that emerging, given all the violence there's been on both sides over time?
Well, I think Palestinians, especially in the past few years, and especially as represented by the President Abbas and by the Prime Minister and by the main political party Fatah, has really been supportive of nonviolent means. I would go a step further. I'd say that, in fact, violence has, and this is what I argue in the book, has been a failure, both as employed by the Israelis, as they have tried to unilaterally impose solutions from their perspective, and by Palestinians. And that violence just doesn't work. It might work elsewhere. But in the context of the Israelis and the Palestinians, unilateral solutions and violence is a failure. And I, therefore, basically call upon the two sides, and especially on the Palestinian side, because in a sense, and this may sound like a paradox, the Palestinians are actually in a stronger position than the Israelis, strategically speaking, in the very sense that we are under occupation or under the occupation of the Israelis. So in a sense, we have a choice, and we can, in fact, resist violently or not resist. But in the end, what we should be aiming at is to try and reach some kind of shared vision with the Israelis and to win the Israeli side over, to make them see with us that the only future that they have for themselves that's safe, that's secure in this region is a future in which they justly share the space with their Palestinian neighbors.
We're talking this hour with Sari Nusseibeh, president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem, leading Palestinian thinker. His new book is What is a Palestinian State Worth? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sari Nusseibeh, let me bring our listeners in, if I may. Amin is calling from Boston. Amin, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Very well.
I'd just like to comment on the deal. I think it's a logical conclusion.
You mean the Fatah-Hamas unity agreement, Amin?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a logical agreement because right now the Palestinians have been, you know, for over 60 years victims of Arab dictators and their policies and their schemes, you know, to gain, you know, themselves at the expense of real cause. And I think right now we are presented with a historic opportunity because the state of Israel right now will deal with legitimate government, especially in Egypt, which is the most important Arab state, that are reflecting the will of the people. The Arab people, and I myself as an Arab American, do and hope and wish for a peaceful resolution and coexistence with the state of Israel. But certain things, Tom, has to really happen. The occupation of Palestine, of the territories, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, Gaza, and the Golan Heights must stop. The wall must come down. The expansionist military designs of the Zionist paradigm since inception in 1948 has to be completely abandoned. The targeted assassinations has to stop. And a complete recognition also by Israel in its historic responsibility in the dispossession and ethnic cleansing, as Professor Ilan Pape so eloquently, you know, wrote in his fascinating book.
If I may, you say Israel will deal with this now because of the new politics of the Arab world, but Hamas, do you think Israel can deal with Hamas, which, there, of course...
Well, yes, I think Khalid Mish'al, as a matter of fact, he made it very clear that Hamas will accept the Palestinian state within the 1967 border. To speak about, you know, I mean, let's be logical and objective here. No one can threaten the security of Israel. Israel is a nuclear power. It can incinerate every Arab capital in less than a half hour if it decides to. Nobody wants war. And least of all the Arabs, they do not wish to have a war with the state of Israel. But one thing we do not and we will never accept, and I think it's logical for the Arabs, is surrender. But there is a difference between capitulation and surrender, which Yasser Arafat refused and which now Mahmoud Abbas has come to understand.
Amin, I appreciate your call very much. And I'm going to hold that one. I'll bring it to you in just a moment. Sorry. Let me get one more here, if I may. Amin, thank you. I'm holding that right here. Beth in Sharon, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Beth.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Wow, I mean, just got under my skin a little bit there. Yeah. I'm flustered, but what I called to say was I have a lot of friends and family in Israel, mm-hmm. and I've been there myself several times. Mm-hmm. And what I really believe is the majority of Israelis are completely dedicated to creating a peaceful relationship between itself and its neighbors. And you would use the word negotiating partner before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You need a negotiating partner. Those are key words. Are the alliances between the Fatah and Hamas going to be one that creates a negotiating partner? Are they going to be able to negotiate in a positive way with Israel, or are they not? We all pray that they are. And the thing is, negotiations can't go forward, you know, really comfortably unless there's a stable environment, and that takes time. So what your guest was saying about, I love that he was saying that the shared vision of Israel and the Palestinians is the only way to the future. That's absolutely true, but time has to tell whether or not this is going to be a stable environment.
Beth, let us pick it up right there. There has been a lot of time, of course, already, depending how you look at it. Sari Nusseibeh, you hear Beth's question, also Amin's observations. Just to quickly go to Beth first, do you think there can be a negotiating partner in this Fatah-Hamas unity front for Israel, or is it not about negotiation here?
I don't believe that the question is about whether there is a Palestinian partner. The Palestinian partner exists. Mahmoud Abbas was addressing a Jewish group only yesterday or the day before yesterday, once again committing himself to the peace process and to negotiations, and asking that Israel at least make a gesture of stopping or ceasing settlements for a period of time so as to allow him to renegotiate. And this, he has made this commitment only a day or 2 days ago, that's to say after he's made his reconciliation agreement, signed it with Hamas. And as your caller, Amin, just mentioned, Mash'al, the head of Hamas himself, has declared only a few days ago that he's committed to a Palestinian state along the 67 lines. So the question, to my mind, in my opinion, really should not be focused on whether there is or there isn't a partner. There's definitely a Palestinian partner. I think the question is not whether there's a partner, but whether there's going to be sufficient territory in order to establish a Palestinian state on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Palestinians in the Arab Spring, Fatah and Hamas making peace with each other, where that leaves Israel and Mideast peace. Sari Nusseibeh joins us from Jerusalem today, president of Al-Quds University, from an old, prominent Palestinian family in that part of the world. He's out with a new book, What is a Palestinian State Worth? And he's really getting down in the engine room of the psyche of all the players here, looking especially at Palestinians, saying transformation will have to come from the Palestinian side first. We'll ask him about that. Sari Nusseibeh, there in Jerusalem, you heard our caller Amin saying the first thing that has to stop is the Israeli occupation. You write that the transformation has to come from the Palestinian side first. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think to begin with, I mean, I have to say, of course, that the occupation has to end. That's the thing that everybody wants to happen. And the question is how and whether it will end. And this is these are some of the questions I put forth in this book. How can this end?
Mm-hmm.
Now, historically speaking, what's happened has been that both Israelis and Palestinians have basically used unilateral positions, solutions. They've tried to impose their own solutions on the other side. They've tried to use violence to bring about their unilateral solutions. But I argue basically in the book that both sides have failed. Israelis have failed also, because if you think about the original Israeli dream of setting up a democratic Jewish state, that seems also to be going down the drain. The reason being that the Palestinian people are there, they're very much there, they're more there than they used to be in the past, and their numbers are growing, and it's not clear that Israel can survive as a Jewish democratic state with continued occupation. So occupation clearly has to end. Now the question is, if unilateral solutions and if violence in particular doesn't bring about a solution,
mm-hmm.
what can be done? And what I argue in the book is that we, the Palestinians, probably have more choices to make, in the sense that we can, in fact, choose rationally to use nonviolent means in order to bring about a change in the attitude of the Israelis. Now, one of your callers some time ago just
yes.
said that the Israeli people in general would be willing to a two-state solution, would welcome peace with the Palestinian neighbors. And I think that's at some level, at one level, true of Israeli society. And if it is true in Israeli society, then the question that Palestinians, that we have to ask ourselves is, how can we make that particular position, that posture, that latent attitude within Israeli society present itself politically? And how can we make that, so to speak, become the dominant political force rather than having the force that we have now to confront, which is a very right-wing, militant Israeli government that does not see eye to eye with the people, including the Israeli people, on the need to make eventual peace with Palestinians and on the need to make the kinds of sacrifices and compromises that need to be made. So here the Palestinians have to make an effort to reach out to the Israeli people and to try and win them over, not win over them.
That's what would that, win them over, not win over them, what would that effort look like, Sari?
Well, I believe that we have to continue appealing, talking to them. We have to continue making efforts, attempts at making sure that they understand what it is that we're fighting for, that we're not fighting to drive them into the sea or to drown them or to cause damage to them, that what we're doing is simply to seek our own rights, our own freedoms, our own human basic rights. I think they have to get that message in, and they have to understand that giving us or our being able to exercise those rights will not mean that we are going next day to start shooting at buses and killing Israelis or killing Jews or trying to drive them into the sea. I think that this is the message that we have to get across.
How do you do that when Hamas is in the unity government just in the last few days? Their leader, Khaled Mashal, has said, you know, he's standing firm behind the right to armed struggle, not renouncing yes. violence.
Well, he has said that, but on the other hand, he has said two things. He's done one thing and said one thing. He's basically said that he's willing to accept a state along the 67 lines, and this is an international position, and that's something that, you know, I think the international community should welcome and should make a lot of. The other thing that one should also make a lot of is the fact that Hamas has been trying, actually ever since it's been in control of Gaza over the past 2 or 3 years, to become a political player. And insofar as it's been trying to be a political player, it's actually been trying to control its borders and to stop any incursions into Israel or rocket shooting into Israel. And, you know, what it means basically is that Hamas is slowly transforming. Now, in addition to this, when Hamas comes and signs an agreement with Abbas, and Abbas is the president, and Abbas commits himself to a peace agreement, to negotiating with Israel, and reaches agreement with Israel, I think what we will end up with is a government, or a leadership, if you like, which may have people like Hamas, which will constitute a minority, who will accept the situation, and who will not, in fact, fight to upset that situation. I believe that the majority of the Palestinian people will support Abbas and support the Fayyad government if he stays prime minister, but they will support, anyway, that team in order to bring about peace, because whether it's Hamas or it's people in Gaza or it's people in the West Bank, after all, what's important is not Hamas, it's not Fatah, it's not the PLO. What's important is freedom for the Palestinians in the Palestinian territories, an independent state. This is what will bring peace, and everybody will back this effort and will back the leadership that will bring it about.
It's a beautiful idea. It's a tall order, a lot of work to be done, a lot of history to overcome. Let me get the call here from Sari Nusebe from Omaha, Nebraska. Alan is calling. Hi, Alan. You're on the air.
Yes. I think one of the things that will contribute to peace would be reducing the pipeline of arms to Hamas. And Israel hopefully is either covertly or overtly contributing to the overthrow of Assad, the Syrian president, because I think that would cut off the arms to Hamas that are coming through Syria from Iran.
Alan, when you see all the Syrians who have gone out in the streets to face down the guns of Assad's government, do you really think that's Israel driving that? I mean, these people are putting their own lives very much on the line.
Not driving it, but hopefully they're facilitating it in some way or another, because I think that the West would certainly gain by the cutting off the arms to Hamas, which, and also the defeat for Iran.
Alan, let us pick it up. Sari Nusebe, already we see in this agreement in Cairo between Fatah and Hamas, the new Egypt, post-Mubarak, taking steps we might not have seen at all before. If the Syrian government of Assad should fall or even stand to this kind of great pressure, how do you see that changing the calculus around Hamas, Iran's influence, the willingness of Palestinians to negotiate with Israel, deal with Israel?
Well, I think certainly people have observed that the changes that are taking place in Syria are affecting the status, the position of Hamas in Syria. And some people are also claiming that it's perhaps partly the reason that this is happening, which explains why Hamas has found it now opportune to come to an agreement with Abbas, with Fatah. That's quite possible. That basically means, if the analysis is correct, that the changes that are taking place in Syria have actually driven Hamas into the arms of Fatah, which, you know, from one perspective, should be encouraging to people that are hopeful for the reopening of a negotiating process between the Palestinians and the Israelis, because now you have Fatah as well as Hamas joining hands under the leadership of the President Abbas, who has committed himself again, once again, as I said earlier, only yesterday to a Jewish group, yesterday here in Jerusalem. And this should be encouraging for people who want the negotiations to start again. But I come back to what I believe is more important than the constitution of the Palestinian leadership, which I believe is the real underlying threat to the Palestinian, to the process, the peace process, namely the continued settlement expansion in East Jerusalem and in the rest of the West Bank. This is the problem, the fact that we have continued settlement and the territory on which Palestinians are hoping to be able to establish their own state is being eaten away in front of our eyes. So the question is, can the settlement process stop? Can this be stopped? And if peace is to be made on the basis of two states, more or less based on the international community's framework for an agreement, the Arab peace plan, basically two states along the based on the 67 lines, If that is to happen, settlements must stop, especially in and around East Jerusalem and in the rest of the West Bank. Now, I don't see it happening. And this is why I'm saying that the next best thing next to this may be, in the meantime, at least to open the lid out and let the Palestinians at least begin to breathe and provide them with basic human rights.
Hard to do, though, when Hamas is saying it's not satisfied with this, with what it has now, and it's prepared to use arms to change it. How do you allow freedom of movement when there may be arms in that movement?
What I'm basically saying, forget Hamas. Hamas is a name. You're talking about individual human beings who want to be able to go to work, who want to be able to make money, to bring money, food to their children, who want to be able to send their children to school, who want to live normal lives. Now, you know, I think it's not correct to try and put a blind on all of that by talking about Hamas and so on. What you have are human beings who want to live normal lives, and I believe that if Israel and if the international community also asks that Israel provide Palestinians, you know, not just in Gaza, also in the West Bank, you know, because Palestinians are living in enclosures, in closed areas.
Yes.
And they do not have access to the same kinds of basic human rights normal Israelis have access to, human beings have access to. And so what I'm saying is that in the meantime, you know, at least if you can't bring peace about, if you can't bring about an end to the occupation, the least that can be done is to bring basic human rights to ordinary human beings.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Sareh Nusseibeh in Jerusalem. His new book is What is a Palestinian State Worth? This is On Point. Shalom is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Shalom, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I respect Mr. Nusseibeh's high intelligence, but nevertheless, we should not forget Hamas, because Hamas in its covenant, which I hope you can put, if not now, in the near future on your website, in this covenant, it clearly commits itself to destruction of Israel. It's not just a vague statement. It's deeply rooted in their perception of what is in Quran, Hadith, the two holiest books of Islam. So basically, Hamas is committed to destruction of Israel, into genocide, which is against Convention of United Nations also too. This is one thing. And as for the solution, Mr. Nusseibeh, highly intelligent, sophisticated person, suggests, it's basically a suggestion in a nice way for demographic destruction of Israel. As you already mentioned, the Arab population is growing much faster than the Jewish population, so it will be just a question of time. There is a Jewish state to be destroyed.
But isn't it a question anyway, Shalom? If that's a fact, if that's happening, isn't it a fact, you know, whatever the political framework around it?
Right, but basically, Mr. Nusseibeh suggests the federation of the two states in a way which would include the Arabs outside of Israel, with Israel. But I have a counter suggestion. Return things to status quo ante. The West Bank used to be part of Jordan. Make them federation with Jordan.
Shalom, thank you for your call. Sareh Nusseibeh, first to the question of the destruction of Israel, that goal, and then who's going to ally with whom?
Look, I mean, I'm sorry that this is how he sees the suggestion. On the contrary, I'm trying to make every effort I can to make it clear to Israelis that what we want is really our own rights, not at the expense of others. As regards Hamas and the you know, ideology, I mean, there's the similar parallel organizations in Israel. You know, the second biggest party in Israel belongs to, Israel, our home, which, you know, by any standard is a racist party. Now, nobody's talking, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say anything about that. It's fine. It's the second largest party in Israel, unfortunately, these days. But I don't believe it reflects necessarily the latent political attitudes in the state of Israel, of the people in Israel. And I believe that the people in Israel really would be happy to reach a compromise with the Palestinians. Now, as to the suggestion of returning to the status quo ante, I'm going to surprise your caller. You know, fine, if they want to withdraw to the 6-11-7 lines ending the occupation, it's fine with me too. As far as the occupation by Israel of Palestinian can end, and the sooner the better, you know, for me it's fine.
Are you saying, you mean, even if that means turning to Jordan, not to Israel?
Well, I mean, you know, after, if the occupation ends and the Palestinians want to turn to Jordan, the Jordanians want to turn to the Palestinians, it would be our business, not Israel's, surely. I mean, do they want also to impose upon us who to get married to, so to speak,
yeah,
if not to them?
Sorry, we just have half a minute here. You've got an Arab Spring, and it is a big deal unfolding. Are we going to be having the same conversation in 10 years, or do you see something really changing?
I think there's an earth-shaking, you know, things happening in the Arab world. I think that this is the real, the only, the first Arab awakening, and it makes me very proud. This is an Arab awakening, and it's a non-violent awakening. And this is something that everybody should recognize, that this is really non-violent. The Arab people have proven to everyone that they are a non-violent people, that they resist the leadership, the dictatorship, non-violently, that the only violence that is practiced in the Arab world is the violence that's practiced by dictators against their people.
Sari Nusseibeh, author of the new book, What is a Palestinian State Worth?, president of Al-Quds University in Jerusalem. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.